From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a small room with a bed, a table, a small television monitor, and a curtain. That curtain separates an identical setup on the other side. On one side lives a man named Jay. Jay is a gun violence survivor who now lives with a disability. On the other side lives a man who we don't know much about except that he tested positive for COVID. And again, the only thing separating these two men is a thin curtain. This was a common issue in a nursing home on Roosevelt Island in New York City. The facility, called Kohler, was in the news quite a bit during the height of the pandemic lockdown. In April 2020, it became the site of a temporary hospital that could treat 350 patients who had the virus. That hospital was supposed to be in a separate wing of the building, but longtime Kohler residents have shown that COVID patients were placed right into their rooms. For more than 380 days, Kohler residents were locked down in the building. Late in that window of time, they were allowed to go into the Kohler courtyard, but it was only after protests, meetings, and calls with the New York City Health and Hospitals President and CEO Dr. Mitchell Katz that residents were allowed back into the community at all. In March of 2021, media outlets reported that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration drastically underreported the number of COVID deaths in nursing homes. The discrepancy was in the thousands of people, including people who were treated at or lived at Kohler. Jay and a number of his fellow Kohler residents shared their story in a documentary called Fire Through Dry Grass. In addition to the frustration and devastation that they felt during the pandemic, they were also sharing their creativity. Their group is called the Reality Poets. With their baseball hats, collectible Nike sneakers, their powerful poetry, art, and music, they say that they are probably not the type of people who you think about when you think about nursing home residents. It was their work and their dedication that helped raise awareness of the plight of many Black and brown and disabled residents who were neglected during the pandemic. You can see this film next week, but this hour we'll preview it with our guests, and we should also talk about the lessons learned, how policies written to address issues like this could change. And I'd like to welcome our guests now. Mary Del Wypick is chair of the Elder Justice Committee at Metro Justice. Welcome back. Thank you for being here, Mary Del.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Pat Muir, local resident whose father lived in a nursing home during the COVID lockdown in 2020. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us on the line is Shannon Nelson, one of the poets featured in the film Fire Through Dry Grass. Hi, Shannon. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, everybody.
And Teresa Williams is with us, a poet and an advocate who is tied to the film as well. Teresa, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
The film is Fire Through Dry Grass, and the documentary will be followed by a discussion. It is happening a week from tomorrow, Thursday, June 13th, at 1:15 in the afternoon. The film's only about an hour 15, hour 20. The doors for the little will open at 12:45, and then the film at 1:15 in the afternoon, followed by that discussion, a moderated discussion with the filmmakers and local advocates. Proceeds are going to benefit the Elder Justice Committee's advocacy, education, and outreach. So that's, again, a week from tomorrow. I've had a chance to see the film. And Mary Del, you and I have talked over the years about working conditions, about living conditions, about staffing requirements, everything related to nursing homes, not just pandemic related. But this particular film is extremely tough on New York State government staffing and what happened to people in nursing homes. What did you make of this film?
Well, this film is very powerful. And when I first saw the trailer, I spoke to some of the people in the film. We were very impressed with it because it spoke to everything we at Elder Justice Committee have been talking about and working for years. Staffing levels, infection control, the care of residents, and the right to have safe, healthy, and homes that they can live their lives as well as they could. And this film just speaks to that on every level.
What do you hope that this film will do? And here's what I mean by when I ask by that. There will be people who will say, well, why are we talking about this now? It's 2024. The story's been well covered. The Cuomo administration was shown to have undercounted nursing home deaths, and Their policy to make nursing homes take in people who had COVID has been well covered. What do you hope changes now?
Well, we still need to keep in mind that people still live in nursing homes and will continue to need them, even though there's more options. And so I want the people to come away with a feeling that nursing homes are not just for elderly and frail people who are on their way to death, that people live there. They can be younger. They are quite capable, and they want to live their best lives. So that's one thing I want people to know. We also want people to know that if we aren't focusing on the issues, that we might revert to some of the same problems again: staffing levels, poor infection control. And we want people to know that nursing homes should be homes where people can live their best lives.
I want to talk to Pat and Shannon and Teresa about their perspectives here. Pat's father was living in a nursing home during the height of the response to COVID in 2020. And this film, it really is a documentary. In fact, it takes you back before COVID hits, and you meet some of the people living it at Kohler. And then day by day by day, you see the effects. You see what happens when someone comes in with COVID. You see what happens when they're not allowed to talk to their daughters and they're not allowed to see their families. And, you know, a dozen days becomes 100 days and it becomes 300 days. And this film, you know, I'm going to be blunt. You know, producer Megan Mack and I were talking this morning, and it was like, it makes you wonder if the people who manage and run or the owners of nursing homes should spend a week living there, working there. I truly, just to understand, because the disconnect between the owners of this place who would come to see the residents and they would say, well, we've done such a great job. And the residents are going, you put somebody with COVID in my room. Nobody responded to me for days. I got COVID. I was, you know, 5 weeks of debilitation. A friend of theirs died. It's really hard to watch. Mm-hmm. Pat, you want to tell me a little bit about the story as you remember it from your family's perspective?
You know, it's hard for me to put myself in my dad's place because obviously I was looking at it from the outside. He has dementia. He could not necessarily tell me. But you can imagine a person is isolated in a small room. They could not gather to have meals. They couldn't gather for recreation. The staff were pressed to just take care of people. So what interaction did people have? You know, my father declined physically because he couldn't get up and he couldn't walk around. He declined mentally because he didn't have as much stimulation as he might have had, you know, as he would have had everything not been shut down. Our only chance to see him was either on a Zoom screen or through a window. And it was just very frustrating for me. I knew that before COVID hit, we'd had a situation where my dad had a mini stroke. And by the time we were notified, he was very unresponsive. My sister and I spent 5 days in the nursing home with him because it took that long before a speech therapist would come in and clear him to eat and to drink. Mm. That was before COVID. So I was terrified that if anything like that happened while my dad was in COVID lockdown, he would die. Who was going to take care of him? He could not go for 5 days without eating and drinking. She and I gave him food and gave him water to drink. But the staff could not because they needed that paperwork to clear them. And so we were really terrified the entire time. He was in lockdown for a year and a half. There were brief moments when they would open up and let visitors come in and almost immediately shut down again because someone would test positive.
You were asking for the opportunity to see him?
Absolutely. over and over and again.
What do you think the overall impact was on his physical and mental health long term?
Well, physically, he absolutely declined. By the time we were able, we moved him to a different facility. And by the time we were able to do that, I would say he was wheelchair bound for the rest of his life. Mentally, I wanted him to be able to go out to see his neurologist just to get that stimulation. The nursing home would not allow patients to leave unless it was an emergency situation. So you couldn't even go out to see your own doctor. So definitely there was a decline with his dementia. Very soon after, again, we moved him, you know, he was not able to carry on a conversation. You know, we did everything we could from the outside. We Zoom called him. We stood outside his window and you know, talked to him on the phone. But it's not the same as being able to see and touch and hug and love your family.
Did you worry about him getting COVID?
Yes, I did. Before the vaccine. Well, yes, through the whole situation. But I think I worried about the global picture more than just that he would get the virus.
In other words, there were many different things that could cause harm to him.
Yes.
Yeah. And in a moment, I'm going to talk to Shannon and Teresa about their experiences. This sounds very strange, but I bring up COVID because I admit this film was very moving for me mm-hmm. to see. I try to also remind myself, I think the farther we get from the pandemic, it's almost like people forget that hundreds of thousands of people were dying. And in this film, you know, you see this group of really interesting, tight people. You know, they lose a friend. COVID was disproportionately deadly to Black and Brown communities, but it killed, you know, more than a million people in this country. And that was very real. Mm-hmm. And so I do want to acknowledge that and say that I don't think it was easy to make decisions, but it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, please elaborate. It sounds like part of what you're saying is, yes, you were worried about your father getting COVID, but yes, you were also worried about what was happening in that isolation.
Yes, I was worried about both. And I think that as a family member, I always looked at, you know, staff were going in and out. People were going in and out of the building who potentially and very often were the people who carried the virus in. If I were able to go in and take care of my dad, I would only see my dad. I would wear the same PPE as the staff did. I probably took more care with myself not to get the virus and not to fault the staff in any way, but they had to live their life.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, they were exposed in many ways that I was not. So in many ways, I was a safer option to allow into the facility. But
it wasn't an option.
It wasn't an option at all.
Yeah. How much do you blame the governor?
A lot. I don't think he values the lives of people with disabilities, with people who are elderly. I think he was concentrating on keeping the hospitals open and protecting the hospitals.
Mary Dell, one question that does come to mind for me, you know, the Governor Cuomo's administration has now been much criticized and it's been well covered that their policy of telling nursing homes you have to accept COVID patients was a disaster. But where should those patients have gone? What was the option there?
Well, I mean, there were some options. Like in New York City, they had built a facilities or made a ship available. But the problem is that COVID was such and is such a contagious disease and was deadly. I mean, 15,000 nursing home residents died of COVID. Where they should have gone to a place that it could be a nursing home, but on floors that were sufficiently staffed, had enough PPE, had proper policies and procedures for infection control, and that they were kept, so people were isolated that had COVID, not just put in the same floor as people who were not. I mean, that's what should have happened. If you needed someplace for people to go, it should have been to somewhere where they could handle the COVID-positive people.
Yeah, and then this film, some of the most powerful parts are when government officials are sort of cheerily holding news conferences saying, you know, what a great job we've done, and we've kept these patients isolated, and then you see Kohler, and they haven't.
Well, the other problem was that we didn't know exactly how many people were dying of COVID that lived in nursing homes. Early on, the numbers were self-reported. They weren't accurate. They only reported online if there were five or more deaths at a time. So we didn't know what was going on. People didn't know that lived in the facilities. They didn't know if they were family members, what was going on. And the public didn't know. So we had no way of comparing who was doing a good job and who was not.
Let me turn to Shannon Nelson, a poet who's featured in the film. We're talking about the film Fire Through Dry Grass. It's a documentary that you can see at the Little Theater a week from tomorrow, a 1:15 in the afternoon showing, followed by a discussion. Shannon, first of all, do you want to describe for listeners a little bit about yourself and about how you're doing and some of your background?
Well, I'm originally from Maine, and I came to New York because I was thrown into a nursing home. And I escaped that nursing home and got myself on a train and came to New York. And I've been here, and I came back. I came back just like a few years ago, and I was put into Kohler nursing home, and that's where I met the people. And, you know, they had open doors already there, and I was invited to join. And so that's how I ended up being an open doors reality poet.
It seems like it has been a pretty tight group of people, a group of friends, Shannon.
Yeah, we're like family.
Yeah. So what do you remember most about March 2020 and then beyond?
Well, I just remember like hearing everything on the news and stuff, and I was just like panicking, you know, because like I know like it was gonna, you know, when it hit New York, I was just scared, you know, and really concerned like everybody else was. But then like when Cuomo started saying that he was going to put people in the nursing home, and then in Tacoma nursing home, we were all like concerned, you know, like we wrote a letter and everything, and I think then Vince and Jay were writing letters and talking to people, and they weren't listening. And so what happened is that they ended up having all these workers come in for the hospital, you know, working on, and they were all coming through the front door of our nursing home, and they were using our elevators, and also they were using, you know, the floors. And so everything was getting contaminated, and there's no way to, you could have kept out, you know, the virus. And so then they started putting patients with us. It's like, that was when it was really sketchy, and people coming down with the virus and stuff. And like, I came down with it, and I was fortunate where I didn't get sick, but I had like no sense of smell and no sense of taste. And I was begging for them to test me, because I didn't want to be, getting people sick.
Yeah.
And you know, they would do, and like one time I was trying to talk to the CEO and trying to tell him like this. I was a dental assistant before my accident, and I had OSHA training. And I know, because we have to deal with AIDS, you know, if we have to come in contact, have to spray everything down. And I was going to ask him, like, are you spraying down the elevators? Are you spraying down this? And none of this stuff was being done. And we weren't even wearing masks. And, and everybody else was wearing masks. And we want, then we had to like beg them to give us that. And it was just really crazy. And then when we got locked down, I've never been locked down into prison or anything like that. And so to be locked down into a room where I didn't even have a roommate, it was just me by myself. And, you know, all I had was, you know, internet and to keep in contact with people. But like you say, it's not the same when you don't have someone there and, you know, giving a hug or being able to, you know, go out and stuff. It's like Kohler is one of the only nursing homes that I've ever been to. And I've been in quite a few nursing homes. And they're the only ones that allow their patients that are, you know, able-bound and, you know, are, you know, have, you know, a good, you know, mindset to be able to go out and be responsible for. And so that was the first time I was, like, shocked that they allowed us to go outside and be a part of the community. Everybody else gets locked up, and sometimes you can't even get off the floor. You have to, you know, you have to get a certain pass for all this, and someone has to come get you. And it's like you're older than 18 years old. You're like, I'm an adult, you know. I mean, hello, like, why can't I go out by myself? I was like, you know, I don't know. It's just like crazy to be like punished in that certain way of not being able to be part of a community. And like, even if you want to go, you know, go to school or get like a part-time job or something, you know, or just even want to go to the library, but you know, all the nursing homes are just, they confine you, and it's just, it's, you know, $1 billion business. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about that. By the way, we're talking to Shannon Nelson, who is one of the people featured in the film Fire Through Dry Grass. And Shannon's bio is pretty remarkable. I'm going to go ahead and read it from the film so listeners know who we're talking to. Shannon was the first woman to join the Open Doors Reality Poets. She was a dental assistant before a swimming pool accident left her paralyzed. She's been a quadriplegic for 27 years and identifies as a wheelchair warrior, a disability rights advocate, a social justice activist, and an animal lover. She once escaped. You heard her just talking about this. Shannon once escaped from a nursing home in Maine and arrived in New York. She lived in South America for a year while escaping homelessness, and she leads the Open Doors Instagram series, The Movement. So Shannon is a remarkable person, and you know, you were just talking about the management of facilities like this. I want to ask you, Shannon, to describe for listeners who have not seen this film what it was like listening to the CEO of Kohler, because to me it looked like he was entirely disconnected from reality. And some of you and the fellow residents tried to talk to him, and that didn't go well. Can you describe what that was like trying to get through to the CEO?
Oh, it's like you said, it was just like, it was like an act of Congress to try to even get anything out of him and try to talk to him and stuff. Like I was saying earlier, like I wanted to talk to him about prevention before this virus was starting to hit us, you know, because we were already been locked down. And, you know, because our section got it, was starting, so I had the virus first, the women's section. And so we got locked down before the guy's section did. And, that was like, one minute everybody was throwing up and it was chaos. And then people were getting sick left and right. And then lying, saying that people hadn't been dying. And it was like, what? Yeah. And so when we were locked up like that, me and this other lady, we escaped two times just to go outside to sit and get some air, just to get outside. We couldn't take it anymore.
Mm. You're hearing from Shannon Nelson now here. And so, Shannon, when it comes to the dying that you just described, there's a part of the film where a traveling nurse is interviewed. And she says that the reported number of people who died in that facility was like 10 or 11. And she said, that is impossible. You know, they witnessed 7 residents die in the first week that they were working there in the pandemic. How badly undercounted do you think that number was?
It was quite off. They calculated it really off. And the thing is, it's like, I was only there. I was really fortunate that I applied for housing and I got housing. So I got an apartment. Like, I was only there for 4 months and I was going like really deep depression, being isolated for just that long a time. And so I can't imagine what everybody went through for a year and a half of being locked up and being, I could see the depression on just their faces, you know, when we would do our Zoom meetings and stuff. It was just sad. Mm.
And talking to Shannon about what she and residents experienced on Roosevelt Island at the Kohler facility, which is just one of many, many nursing homes, of course, in the state, that's featured at the heart of the film Fire Through Drygrass. If you're just joining us, really, this is, I think, an important distinction, because sometimes when we talk about the pandemic, it becomes either a defense of the, call it a lockdown, the shutdowns, et cetera, or it is a kind of entirely 180, like, well, it was never a big deal, it was always a cold, we overreacted, et cetera. And what you see in this film is this virus, people were dying. People were taking months of illness and bed rest. It was extremely dangerous to people, especially if you have underlying conditions. It was very serious. However, the government response to it was often to either lie or just flat out get information wrong about what was happening in nursing homes. It was to claim that anyone with the virus was separated out from the general population, when that often, especially in places like Kohler, was not happening. People were living in rooms separated by a curtain with someone who has COVID, and no surprise, they were getting COVID, and people were dying. The numbers were being undercounted, probably for political reasons. That's been very well documented by the New York Times and others. And then the question, you know, well, what should the policy have been in the first place? Because the people who were healthy, or at least didn't have COVID, were becoming more and more isolated. People like Pat's father. And these families were not saying, we don't care about COVID. They were saying, there has to be a different approach here that says, we're going to do everything we can to truly separate COVID when we know where it is, but we're not going to isolate people for weeks and then months and then longer. So that's what the film is about. That's Fire Through Drygrass. It is a powerful piece of filmmaking. And the film will show at the Little Theater next week at 1:15 p.m. in the afternoon on Thursday the 13th. That's a week from tomorrow. A 1:15 showing. They would love to see you there at the Little. And then a discussion with the filmmakers and local advocates will follow that. After we take our only break of the hour, I want to bring in Teresa Williams to the conversation, and we'll turn back to our guests in studio for some of their thoughts. This is Connections, and we'll be right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, from the spotted lantern fly to the emerald ash borer to other kinds of moths that have made their way through our area in recent years, we're talking about invasive species. What are we seeing now? How do we identify them? And what do we do about it? We'll talk to some of the experts Thursday. I want to bring in Teresa Williams to the conversation. Teresa joined the Open Door Reality Poets in December of 2021. And I know Teresa is passionate about advocating for a number of issues. Teresa, what do you want to make sure that the audience understands about not only this film, but these issues and what you think should change?
Hello, my name is Teresa from Open Doors. What I'd really like to see to change is, you know, for people to understand that it's not only old people that live in nursing homes. As you can see in the movie, you have younger people living in nursing homes and different demographic. You have black and brown people that live in nursing homes. And I like, you know, for people to see that we are human beings just like, you know, the people that make these decisions out there.
Okay. And, you know, yes, human beings are making decisions. Human beings are dealing with the consequences. How do you feel like things are going now? Do you feel like lessons have been learned, Teresa?
To an extent, I think so. So one of the things that came out of this movie was that we have a new CEO. And this year is different because he allows us to, he includes us in decision making, you know. So in this case, he gets our perspective on how things should be done in the facility instead of previously when things were done for us, about us, without our input, you know. So I think something good has come out of it. But I'm not going to tell you that this is, you know, the best solution that we have, but we get in there, you know, it's taken steps.
Let me ask Shannon Nelson if you think enough lessons have been learned. Shannon?
Not quite. So, you know, I was like, I wanted to say that they still don't pay the nurses enough. And, you know, they do, you know, and they don't staff. They're not staffing the nursing homes. Even before the pandemic, and still, it's worse now. And like these, they have this thing that they have a quota now, but it's still, the quota doesn't do much. It's still understaffed. People are still dying, you know, because of understaffing and bed sores, and it's still needs to be a lot more work in that sense. But you know, like COA did get a task force. And we are able to, you know, talk to the CEO with this and other, you know, get and have the Russell. He's the head of the task force, and he advocates for people of COA nursing home. So if they can't get what, you know, what is an issue that they have a problem with not solved, they can, you know, use the task force.
Well, let me ask Pat and Mary Dell about lessons learned here. You know, Pat went through a really, really hard time watching her father from afar, watching her father's physical and mental further decline during that pandemic lockdown. Here we are in 2024. Do you think lessons have been learned here?
You know, I worry that we're forgetting COVID and think that, you know, it couldn't happen again. Certainly, I hope the government is taking care of making sure that we don't end up in the same situation where we didn't have the PPE, we didn't have the resources we needed. I hope that they implement and act on the safe staffing laws that have been passed, make sure that nursing homes are staffed appropriately. And I know that in New York State, we have a compassionate caregivers bill or law, but federally, that did not go through. And I think that's something that needs to be, because families are not only, you know, support for their loved ones who are in nursing homes, but they're also the eyes and the ears and the, you know, I mean, it's wonderful that, you know, at Kohler, they have the Open Doors group and they were able to speak out and advocate for themselves. But, you know, many people who are elderly don't have that ability. And the families are the eyes and the ears and the people who will advocate for their loved ones. And so they need to be able to be in there.
Mary Dell, lessons?
Well, I want to piggyback on something Pat said. One of the lessons is that people like family members are not just visitors going in to say, hi, how are you? We consider many of those families and friends to be essential caregivers. They go in and help with taking care of their loved one, whether it's feeding them, helping them to eat, or helping them to get around the building, or even doing some daily care. And we did get a bill passed and signed in New York State, as Pat said, but federally it's still in the works. So we're looking at the Essential Caregivers Act, which is a federal bill that will give people the right to have essential visitors, their caregivers, to come in, whether it's a public emergency like COVID was or not, or some other emergency. So we really need to make sure that happens. So we need to take that lesson. The other lesson is, as Pat said, we need to make sure that nursing homes are staffed well enough so they can provide proper care, and that people are thinking of all the residents as people who have rights that shouldn't be violated. So those are some of the lessons.
I want to come back to staffing in a moment. I just want to ask Pat a little bit about this question on essential caregivers. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, your father was in a nursing home, COVID hits, and I try to show a lot of grace in chaos, you know, like when everyone's trying to figure out, what do? How do we protect lives? I can understand, certainly, especially in those early days, wanting to really limit contact, et cetera. As time went on, were you surprised that you were not viewed as being in the category of an essential caregiver, essential enough that you should see your father? Did that surprise you?
Yes, very much so. And it was, as an American, you feel like, you know, you have certain rights. And I think that's what really stunned me, that the people in nursing homes did not have the right to make decisions for themselves about the people that they would see. I can certainly understand and support nursing homes having the right to make decisions that impact the nursing home as a facility. But to say, you can't leave, you can't go out, you know, the nursing home could set priorities and set standards for people to come back in. If people went out, they could set, you know, rules for me to come in terms of what I had to wear and what protection.
Or if you were tested.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
But, you know, they took that a step farther and basically told my father what he could and could not do. And it doesn't jive with my opinion of being a citizen of this country.
There's another aspect of this that surprises me, though. And without saying too much, let me just say that having spent quite a lot of time myself in a Rochester nursing home recently, what I find is, and part of this ties into the question about staff that I will ask all of our guests about, I find that the staff doesn't have a lot of resources. They're doing the best they can. They need more people. They need more resources. And when outside faces come in, especially friendly faces, whether for therapy or just for visits, it's a really bright time. Nursing homes, even poorly funded nursing homes, have thriving communities, people who know, get to know each other well. But there's also often a lot of loneliness. And I would think that your offer to be there for your father was not only viewed with some compassion, but with some enthusiasm, because you're essentially a staff member at that point helping out when everyone's understaffed to begin with. That's what's very surprising to me, keeping out those essential caregivers when staffing levels are already low, right?
It was very surprising. And in fact, at that nursing home, the families were able to connect, and we formed a family council, and we met repeatedly with the administrators, you know, begging to be allowed to come in, and they just simply, they were not required to, they did not want to, and for whatever reason.
Mary Dell, how would nursing homes increase staffing? A lot of them will tell you, and some have told us on this program, that, you know, margins are really tight and they can't just snap their fingers and have the funding they need to, you know, increase staffs by 10% or 50% tomorrow. And what would you have them do?
Well, they need to, first of all, pay the people that work there better so that we can get people into the doors and stay. So they need better pay. They need better benefits. They need better working conditions. So if you're working in a facility that does not have good staffing, you're going to feel very negative and run down, mm-hmm. and feel bad about how you're doing your job and how you're valued. They are trying to get more training set up for people to go into nursing homes. But we need to let people know that it's a very valuable place to work. It's a valuable profession. And we need to respect those people. And we're just putting so much more emphasis nowadays into the STEM programs when there's other programs that should be also valued to train people to be nurses, nurses' aides, therapists, teachers.
In a moment, I'll take Mary and Henrietta. Stay there because Mary's got concerns about the reimbursement rate for nursing homes. So we'll talk about that in a moment here. Let me ask Shannon Nelson, who is featured in the film Fire Through Dry Grass, the documentary that we've been talking about. How do you feel about staffing where you have been living? And do you find that staff does their best? Is it under-resourced? What do you think, Shannon?
Oh, it's well, I haven't been in a nursing home for a little while now.
Okay.
Because the last nursing home I was in, it was way understaffed, and I had to call 911 to get myself out of there because it was terrible, horrible conditions. It was right in Manhattan. And so, yeah, it's Cola's better, a little bit better than other nursing homes in the United States and in New York. So, I don't think they've improved with the nursing, with staffing. I think what should be doing, trying to get nursing schools and having nursing schools inside the nursing homes, that would help out a lot because then they could be doing their training while they're going to school and stuff. And because there's got to be some kind of solution because it's not just, like I said, New York, it's the whole United States. And we need other abutsmen. We need abutsmen for those other people that, you know, if people in nursing homes need to call someone and get and have them an advocate, they need those people. And yeah, maybe Teresa has something that she might want to say about
it. Yeah, anything you want to add, yeah. Teresa?
Yeah, like Shannon said, staffing is the biggest problem that we have over here. However, Cola Nursing Home is, I think, a better nursing home than other nursing homes due to the fact that we have like a computer room over here. And so it makes it easy for residents to reach out to families when they want to. But like I said, staffing is the biggest problem that we have. We cannot do anything without staffing. And I think the staffing should also be paid better than what they've been paid, you know. This is a very huge problem, and I think it's going to take maybe the federal government and the state to decide, you know, how we're going to tackle this issue, you know, because the staffing hasn't gotten better. It's still worse, you know. So if you have staff that are not properly paid, and they're overworked, you know, they're not going to do the job the best way that they know how. And the residents and the patients are the ones who are going to suffer, you know.
Well, let me get Mary and Henrietta on the phone to join that part of the conversation. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I basically started researching the reimbursement rates for hospitals and nursing homes after I heard Jeremy Cooney talk about how they couldn't raise the reimbursement rates because then they would have to take from some other part of the budget. Okay, so my contention always is we have 130 billionaires in New York State and 750,000 millionaires. That information is from Forbes. I didn't pull it out of my ear. And anyway, what has happened is I think New York State is mainly at fault at what's going on here because they're the ones that made the laws stating what safe staffing levels are, and then they didn't keep up with what the reimbursements should be in order to staff these places safely. So what has happened is that people are having to go to Horseheads or New York City for rehab if they're on Medicaid because there are no beds here for them. But further, what's happened is that many of these facilities have had to close because they can maintain safe staffing levels. So I'm blaming New York State for all of these problems, and I just think it's horrible.
Mary, thank you for the phone call. Mary Dell Wypick, do you want to respond to that first?
Well, I do think that the reimbursement rates needed to be increased, but we also have to make sure that the nursing homes are using any revenue they receive for the care of residents and not putting that money into the profits for owners and stakeholders.
Okay. Pat, what do you think?
I agree with Mary Dell that, you know, we need to make sure that the money that is public dollars is going to the care of residents.
Shannon Nelson and Teresa Williams. Shannon first, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, I'll respond. This is Teresa.
Yeah, go ahead, Teresa.
I think that the federal government should get more involved, because if these nursing homes are taking federal dollars from the government, then the government should have a say in how the places run. But what is also happening is that nursing homes are buying other nursing homes. So you have one person running at least 5 or 10 different nursing homes. It shouldn't be. You know, so I think the federal government and the state have to get involved and fix this problem, because this is not a New York State problem. This is the whole country. We should stop. I've spoken to people in other states, and the same problems that we have are the same problems that they have as well.
Mary, before I let you go, anything you want to add? Mary and Henrietta? Are you still there, Mary?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm still here. I would just say that the research that I've done shows that we are, New York State at least, currently we are strangling these facilities. And I understand that owners have taken too much money in the past, and, you know, many, many things have happened. But we, you know, we have to regulate. We have to set standards. And we have to tax the people who aren't paying any taxes now to help to solve some of these problems that have only arisen since we don't tax millionaires and billionaires.
Mary, I appreciate go ahead. Thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. On the subject of how the owners or the CEOs of nursing homes behave, this film, if you see the film Fire Through Dry Grass, it is not a good look for the management class, I think is a fair thing to say. It is not a good look for the political class and how out of touch they were. And that's why I felt, and I don't know, Pat, if you thought it was like a flippant comment for me to say that I would think that if you're the CEO or the owner of a nursing home, I think you should spend a week there. I think you should really get to know what it is like in those, and maybe the living conditions are as good as you think they are and as good as you tell the press. Maybe they're not. But I think you should know that, because clearly in this film, the people in the management class had no idea. Is it too flippant to think this, or would you like to see that?
Well, I think there are probably a few people who are high up in the administration of nursing homes and owners who would benefit from, you know, I would imagine they'd probably get a little better treatment than some of the residents who live there because of, you know, the staff knowing who they are. But I think it would open a lot of people's eyes. And I think that's really important too, that, you know, someday I may have to go to a nursing home, and boy, were my eyes opened when my dad was there. And I think a lot of us think, no, that's never going to happen to us. But, you know, as we see, you could have an accident, you could have a car accident, you could be involved in a crime, and you could end up in a nursing home, and this is not how we would expect to be treated.
Well, there's a scene in the film where during kind of a town hall at Kohler, the CEO is there, and one of the residents is asking, how do you sleep at night? And the CEO says, so the question is, how do we feel about the fact that some people at the nursing home had gotten COVID? And the resident says, no, that's not the question. The question is, how do you sleep at night? You know, it was like it bounced right off the guy. I mean, it was hard to even listen to. So I don't know, Mary Dell, if you feel like there is that much of a disconnect. The film shows a big disconnect
right.
to me.
I want to just point out that while the film is very heavy on the very emotional things that happened, the last third of it is about how the residents found their voice and their agency, and they became advocates.
They organized.
And it really
yeah.
inspires everybody to be advocates. That is the best part as far as I was concerned, because that's what we do. We are advocates.
It was very impressive. Shannon Nelson, Teresa Williams, down to our last minute or so. Any thoughts you want to leave with our listeners today?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I hope that... Oops. sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Teresa. You go first.
All right. So what I like to say is I like families to get involved because when families get involved, things can change. You know, I think a lot of families are clueless as to what goes on in nursing homes. But if the nursing homes know that families are involved, your family member gets a better treatment. So I would urge families that have, you know, other family members in nursing homes to really get involved in their care and their advocacy.
Okay. And Shannon?
Yeah, I think we just need our communities to stop, you know, seeing what's going on in their neighborhood nursing home, you know, because it could be right down the street. And like I said, I was right in Manhattan. I had to call 911 to get my butt out of there because they were going to kill me. And so, and you just got to, the communities, and like, you know, Teresa said, it's got a federal, you know, this is going to be not just the state, but a federal thing because it's not just in the state, all the states mm-hmm. and nursing homes, but all the country.
Shannon and Teresa, thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you
for having us.
Shannon and Teresa connected to this film that we've been talking about, Fire Through Dry Grass. It's a documentary, a very powerful one, and it's about an hour and 20 minutes long. You can see it next Thursday, 1 week from tomorrow, at the Little Theater, starting at 1:15 in the afternoon, followed by a discussion with the filmmakers and local advocates. Mary Del Wypick, Chair of the Elder Justice Committee at Metro Justice, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Pat Muir, good luck to you. Thank you for telling your family story. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks for listening from all the crew here at Connections. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.